Say Funky Town Podcast.
Funky Back Podcast.
What?
I say Funky Back Podcast. I say Funky Back Podcast.
Funky Town Podcast.
Yes. I'm Mayor Betsy Price, and we're keeping Fort Worth funky on the Funky Town Podcast. I hope you're ready. This show's going to get a little bit funky and a lot of fun.
Eyes and earphones, honey, whisper in my ear, my heart drops like a stone. There's sun that's shining, and it likes to shine on you. Show me that you love me, baby, let your light shine through. Make a heart with fingers in the air, the kids that linger like deer. Bottom of the bedroom still. Well, the proof is in the pudding, and love putting up with you. We wrestle like benches, and we dance like two left shoes. You're getting me spinning round and round like a scratch to record round. You're the only needle that knows how to find my groove. Make a heart with fingers in the air, the keys that lick like them. I'm gonna get to the bottom of the bedroom stem. Well, I just need some dedication, not Hollywood expectations. Yeah, and I don't need no one nightstand. I'm gonna be a one love kind of man. One love kind of man.
Okay, we're rolling.
All right.
All right, welcome to Funky Town Podcast.
Hey, guys.
That was Bedroom Stair from the Cutthroat Finches, Sean Russell Acoustic Live at the Boiled Owl. And full disclosure, we haven't heard it yet, but I can already tell you it's going to be awesome. we're sitting out at the Boiled Owl today. You can find us on iTunes, Facebook.
Stitcher.
Podbean.
FunkyTownPodcast.com.
You can Google us. We got an email last week.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We'll read that later.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so today our guest is Sean Russell from the Cutthroat Finches.
Hi, Sean.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Thanks for having me.
No problem.
We've actually wanted to do this. We've had this idea, but we haven't do it yet. We were going to have Alexandria Ray on, and then last minute Joe's like, I can't do it here at the studio. I was like, well, let's do it at the Bull Down. And then last minute we're like, hey, the studio's back on.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah.
And so
this is nice, especially with the weather like this.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Kind of winding a little bit here.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was still summertime then, so I was like, we'll meet like 8:30, 9 o'clock when the sun's down. And
yeah, you know, it's not so miserable.
But we went to the I Happy M record release party on Friday.
Oh yeah, that was amazing.
And then Joe told me that, hey, we can't do it on Sunday at our house. Like, okay, we're gonna do it outside somewhere. It'll be cool.
Yeah, I think Joe's playing a show with Mimo Scooter somewhere.
They play every day.
Yeah,
It seems like they play every day.
Well, he played I think they played Thursday night, and then they played, Jeff and Joe played with me Friday. On Friday.
Did they play Saturday? And
they played Saturday at the Grotto for the Night of Terror. They're playing tonight.
Man, I get worn out. I mean, on tour, on the road, I like playing night after night. It's fun, mm-hmm. and you kind of build some synergy. But, like, locally, when I'd play, like, I'd try to fill up my calendar 3 or 4 days, you know, especially before we got married and everything. Uh-huh. And it was like I was all the songs, like, every one of my songs, just like, man, if I have to play this song.
Right, right.
You know, now I know why, like, you know, some bands, like the big bands that you love, like, they decide, all of a sudden you never hear certain songs again because they probably have just beat themselves to death with it, so.
With the Cutthroat Finches, now, before that, what were you doing? Were you like a solo yeah. artist, or did you ever, yeah. were you in a different band?
I was doing stuff as a solo artist, and it was funny. It was like, we were playing the shows and stuff that we were playing, you know, once you start compromising and start playing, you know, too many covers, then all of a sudden you're getting hired. I mean, you know, my band, I was trying to keep them busy because they all need, you know, some of them rely on it. I mean, it's their living, you know. Yeah. And so they wanted to play as much as possible. If we could play 5-6 nights a week, twice a day, they'd be perfectly happy sure. with that. But for me, you know, wasn't the deal. So the compromise was I started taking on some shows where we play these longer sets, and we were getting, like I said, we were getting paid. But it was, as a solo artist, it's like my own music and what I was known for was not necessarily, I was a local, you know, singer-songwriter guy, uh-huh. but it's just like there was no identity to my music, you know? And so that's why it's honestly most of the same people, you know, with the addition of, so we've got Taylor Tatch plays guitar. He produced the record.
Okay.
He ran Audio Styles here in Colleyville. Now he's down in Dripping Springs.
I think that's Joe's crush, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then we went to, Jack from, who also plays, Jack Martinez, plays with Hightower.
Oh, okay.
And plays bass. He used to be with My Wooden Leg. And
I love My Wooden Leg.
Yeah, they were great to watch live.
No, I think Joe's friends with that. See, Joe's yeah. really bummed that he wasn't going to be
yeah, this, yeah. in the small, incestuous music world. Yeah, of yeah. So, but, it, you know, it was them. And then my niece moved up from Austin, and she had played in some bands down in Austin, mostly covers and stuff like that. But, you know, we had played a song, like, jammed one down there at our house one day, and I was just like, you are, you know, I can't wait till you move up into town, like, so you can come play drums with us. And so, like I said, it kind of formulated, and then Eric from Jetta and the Ghost Tree ended up joining us on keys. And so that kind of rounded out our sound, and it was like I really wanted a band project that was just focused on, that had the input of everybody instead of just my ideas, because I realized, you know, the limitations of, I can only hear so much of the song,
yeah,
and the writing process is different when you have a stake in it. And I think the way, you know, there's a level of pride in this record, you know, because every other record I had, there was 12 musicians. If you look at the list of musicians that played music with me, it's ridiculous. And they're all great people, and yeah. I love them all, but it's like they were all coming in because I had 3 hours blocked out for bass that day, you know. So they're hearing the song, they're trying to write something, but it's not theirs, you know.
Sure.
So that's the biggest thing, and we just decided, well, you know, I wanted to have a bird name, but I couldn't be anything with hawks in it, couldn't be anything with eagles in it, and it was like we worked down, like, can't be crows
or doves.
Doves, quails. So it's like the last bird left, you know, besides like vultures maybe, was like finches. It's like, hey, finches, you know. So we're looking through, like, let's look at finch names, you know. And then we found cutthroat finches. Like, it sounds so tough, but it's like, it's a 2-inch bird.
So that's the real name of the bird, is cutthroat.
Yes, it's called a cutthroat finch.
It's got a red neck.
Yep, exactly.
I thought it was just y'all just put that in front of finches to make it sound tough.
It sounds cool, like a tough finch, you know. Yeah. Like, but
that's great.
Unfortunately, finches rhymes with a lot of things that make us people, my creative friends, come up with alternative names for our band that, you know, are a lot of fun too. A lot of, you know, references to tugboats and other things like that that are unmentionable. So
that's cool, man.
Stealing Christmas.
Why the bird though? Why'd it have to be a bird name?
You know, it was fun. We started doing artwork, and I was just imagining kind of a mark. You know, like, how do I want to market this? You know, and like, for some reason, I don't, you know, it was like I was drawing up things, I was designing stuff, and I wanted something that sort of, you know, birds just kind of have like a earthy, rootsy feel. You know, we're looking at maybe like something related to mockingbirds, but there's already like 18 variations of anything related to mockingbirds. So So, but because that was the original idea, and I start looking into it and finding all the history, then I was kind of stuck on it. Like I said, I was drawing up all this artwork for it, but then I realized we can't use that. But I still just want to stay. It just seemed right. I don't know why. It's a strange thing, but it's like it seemed right, you know, for the music and for the project. So,
yeah. You know. So do you think your music, because it's kind of, I mean, I guess it's kind of Americana, but it's a little bit more than that, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because it's got some kind of trippy, spacey sounds in some of the songs.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely got blues and, and country and, you know, influence in it. It's got a lot of rock. The guitar player is Taylor.
Taylor.
He jams, man.
Yeah, he is. He's good. Yeah, well, you know, it's funny how people perceive what you're playing versus what you think it is.
Right, sure.
Because, of course, I think, you know, I'm doing something that sounds like these bands that I listen to. But then, like, for instance, like Taylor and I are big fans. Taylor's much younger than I am, but because of the studio background, he came up with Deep Blue Something and some other studios in Dallas. They kind of, like, just, like, they wiped out all of the music he listened to in the 90s and got him listening to all the music, like the big British bands that kind of preceded the grunge rock, you know, era and all that stuff. So, you know, the Stone Roses, the Smiths, you know, Catherine Wheel, Blur, and all that stuff. And so...
Yeah, that's a lot of good British guitar rock.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Sure. You're exactly right. And that's, I would say, it, you know, we are the Texas version of, you know, of that, of Blur and Oasis and all that kind of stuff. It's a big sound and everything like that. It's just, you know, we're from Texas, so there's still... Some sounds are a little folkier, I guess. But really, the Stone Roses, ironically, especially of all of those, when you listen to the guitar in those songs, they're incredibly folky, bluesy riffs.
Yeah, they got the twangs to them. And
they do. Yeah, and it's like he mastered the best part about it. It's like that's them doing American music.
Right.
And so I feel like I'm doing the British. Texas impersonation of what British people interpret as American music. So, you know, it's a long chase. It's like the Kevin Bacon game. It all comes back to the Smiths, basically, but, you know.
Did you listen to the Smiths when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? So I started listening when I was, I think, in my 20s. So it wasn't my high school era, but, I never got Morrissey. I just didn't understand. I was like, I think he's asexual. He just doesn't care about sex whatsoever. He doesn't like boys or girls.
Yeah.
But the girls loved him, and he always would have flowers in his pocket, and just all this weird little band-aids over his nipples, or
Strange government glasses and scooters and everything like that. We actually have scooters, by the way, that I've had it in my head that I wanted a scooter like that since that's, I think it's the video for Ask by the Smiths off Louder Than Bombs. They drive these awesome scooters, and they're all wearing these like little Vespas, and they've all got these government issued glasses, these black horn rim glasses, and driving around and everything like that. But I, you know, for me, it was a thing of that was the first music that I listened to that sort of the people that were listening to music at that time. It just gave. I was really young when they came out, but it was like they were already broken up by the time I even heard them.
Okay,
I think.
Right, sure.
And so. I was coming out of my skater years, you know, my Dead Kennedys and True Sons of Liberty and all that music era, and getting into, I don't know, just it was like I was still, I also, by the way, you know, I was listening to Smiths. I also had a record from Tiffany and Debbie Gibson.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
So I was riding two very dangerous waves, but I ended up, the Smiths were like this thing, that interested me about it was just the layers and the depth of it, and it was like it was just interesting to me because it wasn't like anything else, and their influence, it's just kind of like it just traces back. It's like bands like all trace back, it seems like their history, some of the bands I like, to the Smiths, to the band, and to Big Star, those three bands, you know, it's like those three bands.
See, I don't know Big Star that well.
Yeah, and I didn't really either, but it's like I started listening, and I was like, what are the common threads here? And these people keep mentioning Big Star, and I'm like, who the heck was Big Star? I had no idea who that was, and then started listening, and I was like, wow, these are great songs, you know? I mean, just a forgotten band, just got overlooked, you know?
Now, the thing I did like about the Smiths was that a lot of their... songs were very happy, or it sounded very chipper and uppy and just, you know, real poppy, but then you listen to it and it's like, this is the most depressing, you know, sad stuff or whatever. And what's his name, Johnny Marr, is it?
Yes.
His guitar still hasn't been duplicated.
No.
Some of the stuff he does, it's like, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how he did it, and nobody else can do it except for him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a flamenco and classical guitar study, like a very classically trained guitarist. But that's what I like about, like, when Taylor writes, it's funny what you said about writing, too, and lyrics, because, like, a lot of the songs that I write, they have a happy sound, but the lyrics in them are, you know, like, when I met my wife, she was talking about how I need to write happier songs and everything, and I was like, I thought they were happy. They just, I guess, when you grow up to this, listen to the Smiths,
right, you're like,
then it's like, you know, a very low bar of what's happy, first of all. So,
it's not If I Die by Your Side, the pleasure's mine, or yes, whatever.
Yes, exactly. It was like one, the first song that I wrote after I met her, and that really did. It was like at the time is when we were dating, and so a lot of this is in the context and the backdrop of us getting married, and coming out of, you know, a hard time, you know, for me. And the first song that I wrote was called Tangled, you know, and the opening line, it was like, this is me doing a happy song, again, in context of the Smiths and the life that I had before that. But the first line is, pain is often the drug we run to. Pain is often a wall we cannot climb. You know, it's like pain is often the beat we march to, you know. Anyways, it's like this, I thought it was a very happy song because it sounded really happy.
Yeah, yeah.
But the lyrics were very dark. But on the other hand, you're exactly right. It's like Ask is a very happy song from the Smiths, but it's really about bombs and these awful dates and girlfriends and all these other things.
Yeah.
Know? So, anyways, I guess I like that juxtaposition, but I think it's there too, in a lot of British music, especially.
No, I think the Beatles is where it all started.
Yeah.
I mean, they were writing. Was it Dr. Maxwell's Hammer or something like that?
That's really just like Maxwell's Summer Hammer.
Yeah, it's a dark song, but it sounds like it's just you know, the happiest.
Yep.
You know. And then Ween's great at doing that stuff too.
They are.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, they like to trick us with their British ways.
So. I don't think Ween's British. I think they're regular.
No,
American.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're American.
But they will. You'll sit there finding yourself singing a song like "Baby Bitch," which is just like it's a sweet love song, and it's just the most awful thing that he's writing about this girl. You know?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's just, you know, baby, you know.
Oh yeah,
it's great.
Yeah,
the Decemberists do that. Like they have like really sweet sounding songs that are
just awful, evil,
really dirty.
yeah,
more sexual than evil, but really dirty.
Yeah, I know. It's funny when you come out again. You listen to it when you're a kid. You don't even know what they're talking about half the time, and then later on, you're like, "Wow, this song is really dark or really dirty."
Yeah.
But you know, I what I love about all those bands are just like the Smiths. It's like, I think what's different now with music and that I think is missing and sad that's been lost is that music had like it identified. What I liked about the music I was listening to is who it identified me with. You know what I'm saying? And it's kind of like, you know, nowadays, like kids, like, you know, they're in public school. I guess they, you know, now I sound like an old man, but it's like, oh, you know, well, these kids all smoke weed, so that's the thing. It's like, man, weed, anybody can smoke weed. It's like music is an identity. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a real thing. You know, that when you guys share an experience or you share, like, this meaning, you ascribe some meaning to the song in the same way, like it meant something to you. And that, I just, I don't, it doesn't seem like kids have it. It you
it's
know, music
still there.
Is very disposable with a lot.
I think so. My daughter's 12.
Yeah.
And it's part of the YouTube generation. All the bands that she finds are on YouTube and stuff.
Yeah.
And now she's in chat rooms and talk about these bands. And whenever she sees somebody else wearing a shirt, you know, and it's kind
of... Oh, yeah, it's the deal, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, because it's kind of weird looking. You don't really know what it is unless you know what it is. Oh, my God. The person there, you know, her new band has Set It Off. I don't know nothing about it, but I mean, it's like if she finds somebody else who knows what that is and who that is, they're immediate friends.
Yeah,
immediately. You like that band, I like that band, we're buddies. It's just, I mean, they still identify, at least she does, you know, and she'll judge other people too. If they're wearing a Taylor Swift shirt, she's like, I don't want to be their friend.
But that's what's funny, you know? Is like that level that you are, like, I think that's why when I was young, I ascribed this high calling, this high value to music because of what it meant to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore it seemed like this is the high calling. Like this is like, and I remember when I started seeing friends that were actually writing their own music and people would listen to it. I was just like, whoa, like this.
You can do this?
This is,
I mean, like us regular people?
Yeah. Like, you mean I'm old enough to be doing this right now? You know, I could do this. I could learn, if I could just learn to write songs and play guitar and do anything worthwhile, then this would be awesome. You know? So anyways, it's you know, that's I think that's why I love music. It's like those impressions you have as a kid, you know, when it means so much to you, then it's kind of like you hope. I mean, the highest calling, or the highest reward, I should say, has always been for me to write a song that means anything like what it meant, the music meant to me.
To you, sure.
Yeah, growing up. And even you know, with other bands that never really got really big, but just hearing them and what they put into that song and what it meant to me because of where I was at the time, you know, mm-hmm. it's like... That's I just that just seems like the ultimate thing. It's an eternal thing, you know. So
and see now the cool thing about the scene around here, because like at least 20 years ago, it didn't seem to be this way. You would go see your friends' bands play around town or whatever, and maybe you'd have their CD and you listen to it because they're your friends and you liked it, okay. But it never really meant anything to you as far as like what a real record meant. You know, these aren't real records. These are my friends in their garage band.
Yeah.
But it seems like these days, you know, at least the people that I know, the friends that I'm with, have real records that from real studios that sound like real music on the real radio or whatever. And it's like I actually do find myself having over the past 3 years diving headfirst in this whole thing, I've come across to where it's like there are certain songs that have certain meaning to me because of certain things in my life. Like, I don't think... You know this, but like they have a song called "The Bridge," and it's kind of Van Gogh's suicide song or whatever, you know. But a friend of mine killed herself last year, and it's like every time I hear that song, I tear up, and I'm like, it's so beautiful, it's so meaningful. But I feel like it's her, even though it's like I know the writers, I know them, you know. It's, but I still feel like I can still separate myself from them and know the song is almost speaking from another time and place to me. You know what I mean? It's just weird. But I still, even though it's a local band that I'm friends with and have beers with, you know, but they wrote this beautiful song that will always be with me.
I think that's the magic in writing and creating music specifically, is you can apply that to, I mean, you take whatever you hear and apply that to yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like a real magic.
Yeah. But I think there's some people now that are they're consuming local music to where it's like there's just that much more of a chance for people to relate to your songs.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that way before, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I love, you know, like when we first met, we both love local music. We met, Luke Wade introduced us. Mm-hmm. I keep saying we, my wife, honey's here being silent. But, you know, like Luke Wade, we were seeing Luke over at Fred's, you know, and then his brother David introduced us later when Josh and Sam were rocking it. They used to have the Tuesday night thing with Josh Weathers and Sam Anderson. Yeah. They used to rock. I mean, like Tuesday nights would be packed at Magnolia. I mean, packed. And David introduced us one night, and it was just like the strangest introduction ever, but it was just like we, you know, it was like he knew it had meaning to have it. So it's kind of like music is obviously, you know, a colossally huge part of my life, but it's like the identity and the community and everything around it. And, you know, I think people have a taste for it, just like around here. Like if you're on Magnolia Street and they try to open a Chili's down here, they'd probably burn it down, you know. And I wish that... Well, people are, but you know, it would be fine for me to just be a well-known, like somebody who meant something to Fort Worth,
right?
You know, as a writer,
yeah,
you know, that would be enough, you know. Like, I mean, it's like I don't care what's going on in Denver or Delaware, or that other state in the other, you know, it just doesn't matter. It's like as much as your own community, like the people you care about and the people you're around, because like you know. People are coming around to that idea. I think in a lot of ways they do, but it's just, you know, in music, we both love local music. I have no idea what's going on in like national music or what's on the radio. I mean, it's like other than like KXT and the Pirate and the other stations that play us, like up north, especially up north, we get better play.
Really?
We get more play up there, like
that's cool.
the other NPR stations up there. But you know, it's like I like. This is what I care about. It's like meaning something here and making an impact here would be fine for me. So
and then now you guys are part of Hand Drawn.
Yeah,
you're on the team. And so now that covers like the whole state.
Yep.
And then is there a couple others like maybe Oklahoma, Arkansas, or something?
Well,
is there?
Well, now okay. So Hand Drawn Records, they mainly are here in Austin.
Yeah.
And then.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, or really, I say here like Dallas, Denton, and Austin. Basically, that's where their artists are. So there's hand-drawn records and a hand-drawn pressing. Pressing will be a bigger thing because now they just bought two new vinyl presses.
Yeah, they're going to make records. Their own records now.
Real records, yeah. And so they'll be printing probably, they're still probably a month to 6 weeks away. Like the whole process, getting like I know more about vinyl. I never was interested in vinyl pressing, but I've learned along the way watching this thing come together. But the label was, you know, I liked what they did because they just had a, there were guys from a marketing background and music background that started it. Dustin from Exit 380. And he's the most driven, insane person that I know. But he and I had, like, we met years ago when he started recording in the studio at BPL. But he was, when he just does stuff, like he has this vision for doing things in an old school way, like getting vinyl presses, obviously. Uh-huh. And I had an idea for how to distribute and develop what we're, you know, like they're trying to develop sort of a marketplace idea. They want to be a one-stop shop for bands and band development and everything like that, you know, like for groups. So not just the records. The records is a cornerstone part of it. But the record is almost more representative of how they think about music, which is, again, we started buying records, you know, because records like make you listen to stuff on the record and who the you get to know who the artist is, you know. You can't skip through it, like we were joking around earlier about singles, where you get a you go on iTunes or Spotify or whatever, you hear 20 seconds and you skip if you don't like it. It's like you put on a record and you listen to the whole thing, you connect. So when you make a purchase, you're making a commitment to a record, you know.
Sure you are.
But also, even distributing, like we distribute and we go on the road and everything like that, just like you would have in the 1960s. But we have to target a market and we have to say, okay, these are our six markets. We can do that over like kind of a two long weekends, you know, kind of a short term, like, you know, Oklahoma, maybe even St. Louis, and then up north into Minneapolis and Chicago and all that stuff. We're going to focus on these radio stations. So, like, when we go on tour, like, we work our asses off.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's, my wife went with me, and we were, you know, she's a photographer, so she's shooting. It was us and Un Chen and Brandon Callies from the label, and we went up, and it was like
in a van,
all of us in there, and we go, you know, we have these long, you know, sometimes 4 or 5 hours on the road. Getting out of once you're out of Texas, every place else is not a long drive,
right?
You know, it's like getting out of Texas is like, you know, driving across France, basically. So. Then after you get out of there, it's not so bad. It's a couple-hour breaks. But you know, distributing vinyl, hitting the record store. So we would be like, during the day, we'd hit radio stations. By 5 o'clock, we're at a record store. Then we're at our gig that night. So it's like by the end of the day, it's like I've talked for an hour. I've played songs for another, you know, hour already.
Mm-hmm.
Then we play a show. And then it's, you know, bomb out at the next truck stop. You know, which we actually, I have to say, the Pilot Truck Stop is a fine institution, I'll say.
Yeah.
$12, you get a shower, towels, bath mat, everything's clean. You get the toilet, all your stuff, nice big spacious area.
So y'all actually did that.
It was, it was nice.
We slept on some chick's couch one
we
night.
We did do that also.
We just met, too, so that was fun.
Yeah, we did have a lot of people that felt sorry for us and could tell that we needed a shower, and they let us come stay at their house.
That's awesome.
So it was fun, But that thing, it's like that's what you would have been doing back in the day. And I think, you know, you're talking about music with young bands that are coming up and everything like that. It's almost like the bands that anybody that's more than 25 would have grown up listening to, they were already on the road. They'd already done their 100 inevitable shows. You know, they'd already done 100 shows, and they've already been in the studio. You know, they've cut their teeth somewhere else.
They're not brand new.
They're brand new to everywhere else except where they're from.
Exactly.
Maybe. But, you know, it's like now everything can be done. Like, you don't have to really be able to sing that good. They can just auto-tune you in. You don't have to be a great drummer. They're going to just basically beat detect and slide your drums into pit, you know, into the beat. To make it all fit. And they're going to edit everything. They're going to have you take 5 takes and slide it. You know, we recorded our record on tape. It sounds better. It's not just a trick. It really does sound better on tape. You know, some hipster trick in the studio just so we can say, oh, we recorded on tape. We still did some editing in Pro Tools, but it's like the tape has real value, like Taylor Tatch's master tape recording of all things. But you have to get a whole take that you can use. You can't say, well, we want the, you know, we want the bass from this track, and we want to use this from this. It's like, you have to get a whole tape that locked in, and then you can go in and lace some things on top of it. But it forces you to, but I think with that, I think you can have a record way before you should probably have a record, you know.
Right. Yeah,
and so, therefore, and therefore the music becomes disposable to you. Now, you may get lucky, you know, and, like, write some awesome song. Maybe you were naturally, you should have been doing this all along. Whatever.
Yeah.
But the speed to the studio and the lack of development that's available for artists to kind of bring them up it's sad. Yeah, I mean, and not sad. It's just, it's... I think that's why music seems so disposable, because anybody could do it. It doesn't matter how bad a singer you are. You can go in the studio and they can make you sound like whatever you want.
Well, you can do most of the stuff at home for free.
That's true. You can do it at the home for free.
Yeah, but you can record it on your phone, put it on your laptop. That's in the GarageBand and, you know, make a little video for it with your phone and put it on YouTube. And if it hits, you know, maybe they have 12-year-old girls that are making $1 million from a YouTube single that they made or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
iTunes actually put it up there, and you can download it on iTunes now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. Just instant. It's kind of like instant gratification, but then what doesn't come is you don't build up the things that you would normally have built up.
Right.
Doing it the old school way. You know, you haven't built, you don't have, you know, like radio is just one layer of the thing. And then, but also online now is another layer of the thing, and having an online presence. And then social media is another, you know, really kind of separate even than your online present possibly. And then, but then it's you being there. If you're not coming to town, the press isn't going to pick you up. And if you're, if the press isn't picking you up, nobody's going to know to go online to find you in the first place. And if you're not on the road going to that city, the press isn't going to pick you up, and the record stores aren't going to put your records in their store. Why would they? So it's kind of like, you know, it's like all of these things that, like, normally you do all that stuff first, and then a record label or whatever else would just come in and make what you're already doing better.
Right.
But they're looking, bands come in now, it's like, hey, we got 3 songs, we want $1 million contract, you know? And it's like, of course, you know, they, and then the people that get it, you know, they might get lucky, like I said, and have some big hit, but for the most part, they're just basically in debt for $2 million and 3 records that are never going to get released.
Right, exactly. That's what
but they have a kick-ass tour bus.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's see how far we are. I don't know.
We're coming close. We got about 2 minutes.
About 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next song that we're going to listen to that you recorded live is Tosca, T-O-S-K-A?
Yep.
What is that?
You know, the song is very stream of conscious. It's not a story. Like, I tried to get away from storytell too much, you know, from my singer songwriter roots on some of these songs. This is one of them. And the word Tosca is actually a Russian word that means, like, melancholy or ultimate sadness. So again, going back to my ultimate Smith sadness, that's basically what, you know, I wanted something that had kind of a dark, heavy feel, but that also had a bright side, like we talked about.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, that's what I feel like that song is. You know, it's kind of about overcoming things, but I try to keep it intentionally disconnected in a way.
Cool. Cool. And it's on this record.
Yeah. It's the second track on Reality. And it's, like I said, it's a sad word. Nobody knows what it means. I wonder what people think it is. They probably think it's like a Fleetwood Mac tribute to Tusk or something. I don't know.
Well, when you first said it, I was imagining like a Tabasco, but there's but there's also like some sort of Southwestern word. It's like T-A or T-O-S-C-A or T-A-S-C-A. Or
I know what you're talking. Yeah,
I don't know if it's a van or something.
But
that's kind of what I was thinking of. But whenever you spelled it, I was like, I don't even know what that is. I don't know if it was an acronym, or
if I'd have put the two dots above the O, then it would have been like, oh, it's some foreign European thing.
Right, that makes sense. That's not English.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, we'll listen to that and come back.
Ready? I'm sorry.
I'm going.
Okay.
I'm rolling.
Leave it alone. Don't overload. Focus on finding. Don't close your eyes, raise up your dreams. Fail to achieve, break everything you think you own. Then you are free, me that you know the way. Break your July. I light up like the 4th of July. Nothing is real. These walls are all yours. Just sing them down. The world was a thought.
All right, welcome back to the Funky Town Podcast. That was Tosca by the Cutthroat Finches. Very good song, I'm sure.
We haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, we're recording new songs afterwards. It's going to be good. Again, you can find us on iTunes, Facebook, Instagram. Our email is funkytownpodcast@gmail.com. So please, for the love of God, email us.
We did say earlier, we are on the Pirate.
Oh, we are on the Pirate 975. All right, let's jump into it. Funk Sound Podcast. Zach lives. I'm going to go counterclockwise like usual. Devin, can I have a noun?
Sewer?
Super?
Sewer.
Sewer.
Sewer. I like that. Start
describing the room again. Brady, can I have a verb?
I want it to be epic. Okay, so cross country skiing.
Well.
Okay, should I try again?
No, that's great. Country. I just gotta type it in. Skiing.
Remember there was like the jump rope song when you were a kid, and then at one point they were like, he fell into the sewer, and that is where he died. They didn't call it murder; they called it suicide.
Yeah.
Twisted. I don't know. I always stuck with me. Suicide.
That's a good band name.
It is a good band name.
It's a good
punk, like, skater band name.
Yeah, totally. It's more
like a... Hey, Jeff, can I have an adjective?
Okay. How about ferocious?
Ooh. Ferocious. All right, Sean, can I have an... No, just an adjective.
An adjective. Okay. I'm going to go with bigly.
Bigly.
It's a Trump word. It has to be real.
No, it actually is a real word.
You is can look it really?
You can source yourself in those.
Yes,
and you're
it's
fine.
An actual word. I forgot what the meaning of it is.
I thought that was a made up word, yeah. Dang it.
I did too, but it's not.
It's not,
word.
It's a real word.
That is crazy.
Devin, can I have a noun?
I tried it too, but I couldn't balance very well.
Ivanka? Trump?
What was that?
Ivanka Trump?
Yeah.
Political. Remember to vote on November 8th.
Unless you're voting for Trump, then
go home. No,
it's November 16th.
No, I think he came up there and said November 28th. Yeah, I think that's what he said. Yeah, it's 25th, 28th. Yeah. Like, you know, make sure you get out there voting.
Not at all.
Best thing to do, just mail it in by January 1st.
Yeah. Like your taxes. Oh, wait, no. Trump taxes. Those are two different
things. He doesn't do these. Brandy, can I have a PG-13 or lower body part?
Aw. Okay. A weenus.
Weenus.
With a W.
Well played.
It's, for those of you at home, that's your elbow. The skin on your elbow. All right, Jeff.
Sure it is, Zach.
Jeff Lord, can I have a noun?
How about cutthroat finches?
Cutthroat finches, perfect.
Cutthroat finch or singular finch.
Cutthroat finch. Well, it came out as finches, so.
Man, somebody that I trust put online that it was in a real word, and they gave the definition for it. And
but is it Urban Dictionary, or is it
I'm not finding
actual
it now.
Dictionary?
The word bigly?
Yeah, I'm not finding it now.
It has to be a real word. Otherwise, there's no way they would let someone run for president that makes up words, right?
I mean, it says
strategery.
Shakespeare wrote words.
The adverb of big is bigly, I guess. Is what it says here. Related forms, biggish, adjective, bigly, adverb.
Oh, my gosh, it is a real word. Well, I'm stupid.
No, you're not stupid. Sean.
Smartest Trump.
That's so sad. That's actually a bigger insult. You didn't band-aid that at all.
You're like, I'm out of here.
Before you go, can I have a plural noun?
A plural noun. Okay, let's see. A plural noun. I'm going to go with hobos for my second grade.
Hobos.
My second grade use of Mad Libs included the word hobo. So a lot. He's a big player.
Right on.
Second grade scene.
Right on. Demon, can I have a noun?
Why do I always get nouns?
You get all the nouns.
Oh, let me see. What's a good one?
Person, place,
or
thing.
Sometimes an idea.
Let's go with Houston.
Oh, gosh.
Houston. All right. Brandy, can I have an adjective?
For those playing at home, an adjective is a...
Descriptive. How do you describe it now?
I thought you had this.
I thought I had it. I'm second guessing it.
Like,
examples. With bigly being debunked, now I don't know anything.
I know.
The examples they give are special and ugly.
Yeah, it's descriptive.
Okay. Descriptive. A good descriptive word. Uncanny.
Uncanny.
It's my favorite word.
That's a good word.
Jeff Lord, can I have a body part? You know the rules.
Does it have to be? Oh.
How about the femur?
Femur.
It's a strong one.
Strong, yeah. That's a good one. That's one of the good ones.
It's a good one.
You need that.
Not the coccyx.
Second grade.
Sean, can I have a verb?
Discombobulate.
Well, great. I gotta spell this, you know.
That's why it's funny.
You just gotta spell it so you
will
can
spell
remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be right. You just have to know what it is.
I was keeping that one in the back
keeping
of my head
yeah.
for when that came around.
That's
so.
Good. That's good.
All right. Devin, can I have a past tense verb?
Yeah. It's kind of like ran.
Like ate or ran or died.
Drove?
That's a good one. Yeah.
I did.
Is drove on the board?
Brandy, may I have a verb ending with ing?
Sexting.
Sex.
Not PG-13.
No, that's fine.
Okay, sexting.
Sexting.
He would have said effing.
Oh, okay.
Well, could cross a line. Do teach about sexting in school now?
Oh,
they do.
It's a problem.
A problem.
I don't think
you're doing it right, honey.
Like, okay. Well, every time I sex kids in school,
that's a problem.
No.
Now we know.
No,
the,
no, no. Yeah.
Now we know the problem.
We're gonna cut that out.
Yeah, identify the problem.
That's a 7-10. Yeah,
that's great.
You know I'm doing this. So I'm not gonna do that.
I'll get lazy. Oh, please cut that.
Keep it raw.
Jeff, can I have a plural noun?
Plural noun. How about prisons?
prison.
Where Zach's going to be.
You're right. That's right. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, completed.
Yay. On that note. Yeah.
This is a Mad Lib, or a Zach Lib, entitled George W. Bush's Quotes. Uh-oh. Are you ready to read it?
You're on the right set, my track.
All right, Funkytown Podcast, Zach Libs. I'm the sewer, see? I don't need to cross-country skiing. I don't need to cross-country skiing while I say things. That's the ferocious thing about being president. I'd wish you'd given me this bigly Ivanka Trump ahead of time so I could plan for it. I'm sure something will pop into my weenus here in the midst of this pred compass.
These actually make more sense than his actual quotes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
With all the pressure of trying to come up with cutthroat finches, but it hadn't yet. I don't want to sound like I've made no hobos.
Well,
I'm confident I have.
Yeah.
I just haven't. You just put me under the Houston here, and maybe I'm not as uncanny on my femur as I should be in the upcoming with one.
Sure.
I promise you, I will discombobulate to what has been drove here, even though I wasn't here. We spent a lot of time sexting about Africa, as we should. Africa is a nation that suffers from incredible prisons. That's the Zach Libs.
I think that was actually verbatim from his last few.
Yeah, right? Yeah. All right, so we're back after the Zach Libs break.
That was good.
That was as good as it usually is.
Your game makes me feel dumb. Like, I don't know how to use words.
Oh, you do know how to use words.
Yeah, listen to this album. You know how to use words.
It's wonderful getting, like, poets and lyricists come on, and they're like, oh, what?
Adverb.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was just glad you didn't go in there. I was thinking in my head, I know there's another literary term called prepositions, but I don't remember what they are.
Yeah, I'm not
sure.
So
thank God that wasn't part of the game.
I know helping verbs because I learned a song when I was a kid called The Helping Verb Rock, and it's only part of it, but it's like, have, has, had, and do, did, does, and would, should, could, and
also, I'm scared of pronouns. Pronouns, like, what is a pronoun?
Your drummer,
I
don't know.
I think it's Mr. and Mrs., right?
English major would know.
I think pronouns are like...
He, she.
Mr. Sean. Oh, and he, she.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
They... there's new pronouns.
Probably describing the noun.
But that has to do with the LGBTQ kind of.
So I, yeah.
That's the new pronouns.
She said proly. I was like, oh, is that a word too?
I just made it up.
Yeah.
It's the adverb for pro.
Shakespeare made up a bunch of words.
When you're an artist, you can do what you want.
You can totally do that. Yep. I was talking to I had a family reunion this weekend, that was my wife's family, you know, but I met one of her cousins named Tina, and her son's name is Christopher Robin.
Sometimes it's just
from
Pooh. No, and it's great. And, you know, he's a grown man now. He's in his 20s, early 20s. He's a cool dude, big beard, and he's just cool as hell.
But you can't have a talk to him like he's Christopher Robin.
Right. You know? But we were talking about the writer who did Winnie the Pooh, because talk about language. I mean, it's like, heffalumps are elephants, and woozles are weasels, and it's like all these different terms for these different. It's great. It's so clever the way they would write, and you can totally change the word. You can change the word whatever you want to if you're a writer. You can make up stuff.
It might have been Dr. Seuss using a pseudonym.
Sure.
My niece, at 2 years old, used to say, "You're gonna piss me."
Piss me.
Meaning piss me off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so if you ever see our drummer, Drea, out at a show going, I was like, hey, don't piss me off. Or, what?
Piss me.
Don't piss me.
Don't piss me.
Don't
you're piss,
piss
me.
Me. She'll know exactly what you're saying, and she'll look over at her and be angry.
Yeah. Now I am piss me, or whatever.
You pissed me
now.
So I was looking on your Facebook page, and I found something interesting, and that was that you graduated from L.D. Bell.
Yes.
It's interesting to me because I graduated from L.D. Bell in 1990.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So yeah. did you graduate?
Let's go down through the friend list of people that we know together then.
I don't know if we know anybody. I was a weirdo and lonely in school, so I didn't know a whole lot of people. I knew some people, but...
That was funny. It's like I played soccer, so of course I knew all the weirdos, and I was the president of the art club in 91, I'll just say.
Nice.
But we, you know, we definitely know a lot of people. But yes, graduated. I was the art club president when I graduated, and I actually got a scholarship from there to go to TCU for
That's
a little
amazing.
While. Yeah, and they just opened up the what is it called? The Moody Building, I think, the communications building, the really nice glass building that's right when you come up university into the campus on the left. It had just opened, so they were recruiting really heavily in the arts and everything like that, like they had not before. And so I was an art major there. And that's actually where I learned to play guitar. I started playing guitar when I was at TCU.
In college. Oh, cool.
Yeah. I had played keyboards and drums and all that kind of stuff. I was big time into The Cure and into the Yaz and all that stuff like that. I like to play on keyboards, you know, and Joy Division and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean also used to mix...
I was a DJ too.
He was a DJ.
Oh yeah.
I worked at a tanning salon by day.
And I had a friend who worked at a tanning salon too. That's
the one, right? It used to be on University. It was right there.
This guy worked in the Mid Cities whenever he worked at a tanning salon.
You know? Oh my gosh. I worked at B Tan over there too in Mid Cities. Terrible place. It was near the great record store though, B Sharp Records.
Yes, so. We're talking about that during break.
Yeah.
B Sharp Records. See, I remember the one that was over by that Jack in the Box, kind of by Northeast Mall. There was a little record store there.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep, and I bought my first CD there.
Uh-huh.
My very first CD was Unforgettable Fire by U2.
Mm, great CD, man.
Now, I want to back it up that I also bought the worst song. Do you guys know what the worst song ever written according to GQ Magazine and several...
Is it We Built This City?
Yes. I bought that.
Really?
At the same time.
So you actually liked it back then?
I like that song.
Enough to buy it, yeah. Because I never liked it.
See, that's the dichotomy that is Sean Russell. That is the working contrast and conflict within me to like stupid things and awesome things. Unforgettable Fire. I still listen to Unforgettable Fire. Still my favorite U2 record of all time. But I will say I have never gone back and listened to the Starship.
No, you don't listen to that anymore.
No, I didn't even bother to ever. Downloaded even when it was free on iTunes.
Yeah, see, the first U2 I bought was not when it came out. Mm-hmm. This is after the fact. I didn't like U2. Whenever I first heard U2, it was there in Joshua Tree, and I thought Bono was a pansy, for a safe word. You know, he had his little ponytail, and he's all like, with or without
he
you,
had a
and
mullet.
He's dancing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
During Joshua Tree, he had his ponytail, and he had his vest on, buttoned up with no shirt on underneath, you know, dancing in a circle with his guitar on his back, singing with it. And I was like, this is the lamest stuff ever.
You couldn't take the black and white erotica.
No, I didn't like it at all, man. And so and then, of course, it was this, and I've always been this guy to where it's like, if it becomes really big, I don't like it. Won't even give it a chance. Never seen Jurassic Park because it got so huge so fast, I never watched it.
Oh, my.
I'm not gonna
you know what?
No, I miss out on things because of it.
Let's duct tape him to a chair and make him watch
yeah, right.
it. We'll tape his eyes open.
Give him the old chocolate orange.
But one day...
You know, let's not go that far. Wait, man, let's just make him watch Jurassic Park and stick to that.
And I'll
Whoa,
watch it.
Zach.
Yeah, no, like, you don't even have to duct tape.
Who knew that was within Zach to say?
I had a sneaky suspicion.
Whoa.
But
you're giving me a phantom sensation right now.
I heard Desire on the radio. The Hollywood remix, you know, with the Reaganomics bit in it or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Who is this? And then I found out it was U2, I was like, there's no way. But I went back and ended up buying War on tape at Half-Price Bookstore and was like, this is, loved it. And then ended up buying everything in their catalog, and I'm a huge fan now.
Did you listen to Unforgettable Fire?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's one of my absolute favorites.
But it's one of those things that, like, this is the first CD I bought, so I listened to everything. And when I bought the Smiths, it was the same time. And, like, that record, it's like one of those things that, like, I think... I wonder, like, now we would only know, if they came out today, we'd know Pride in the Name of Love and not another song on there.
No, that's that song Wire, I think it is, where it's like, innocence and innocent I am, guilty of the charges now at hand. I'm like, that's freaking great.
But also like, you know? Promenade and Elvis Presley in America, like those MLK. Songs and Bad and MLK,
so many beautiful songs, gorgeous.
You would never. I don't think I don't think today those songs, like, I bet people that are even U2 fans, even the song Unforgivable Fire, I do a cover of it, and
do you really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And like for the 8 U2 fans that might be in an audience, they're just like, oh my gosh, like it's like. They're just thinking in their head, they can't wait to go home and put on Unforgettable Fire on repeat all night long. You know,
I love that album.
Sweet, sweet, passionate love to their beautiful wives.
No, for sure. That video is awesome. Like when that, because there's a middle part in that song where it's like, dun, dun, and then it crashes.
Yes. I know, it's so 80s though.
But it's great. And the video has like lightning crashing in the background of a big city.
It's so 80s though. That's the part of the song where I just like, I've tried so hard to find a relevant way to do that bridge, because it is so Flashdance and so like I can't get out of my head like Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley dancing to it in interpretive dance or something, or Romy and Michelle, like, you know, doing their hands in a flash, like, so I've tried, but I still, one of the most beautiful songs, it's one of my favorite songs of all time.
And it was written about the atomic bombs going off in Nagasaki and Hiroshima or whatever. That's what it's. That's the Unforgivable Fire. Is that atomic bomb?
Yeah. And if the mountain should crumble or disappear into the sea, not a tear, no, not I. I mean, just it's gorgeous songs like that.
I know, man. It's like people make fun of them and stuff like that, dude. But there was a time whenever U2 was just like, you couldn't get any better than that, man. They were on top of it.
People can make fun of bands like that, and for every time that they make fun of them, they've made another $100,000.
I know, right? You know, that's true.
So, as they laugh to the bank of Ireland, you know.
Well, looking on your Facebook page and saw like the bell thing, I thought that was interesting. It's always cool to find other people that went to the same school as I did.
Yeah.
Ansley from Panic Volcanic went to Trinity.
Oh, really?
So automatic enemy, you know.
I think
I think Jamie Knight and Aaron Knight are Trojans as well.
Oh my gosh! You know, he's going down.
I know, but it's just funny to even find out that kind of stuff. But then I went a little further, and you posted a picture of Cool Water. And I was like, oh my God, cologne! I forgot about, you know, cologne. Cool Water. Like,
Water.
I wore Obsession all the time, and I was like, there was a purple bottle. I think it was Passion.
Oh yeah, there was.
I wore Passion,
or was it
a lot,
Jupe,
dude.
Or something like? There was something called Jupe.
There was one of those too.
Yeah,
but I think I wore Passion, and I think it was a Calvin Klein one
as
well.
You know what? You know what you should get for Zach for Christmas?
Some cologne,
Cool Water.
Some Cool Water. Well, see, so my question is: whenever we were,
it's
in
very
high school,
retro. Very 80s retro style. You can roll back into.
I work at Enterprise. And it was my day job, and so I have a lot of cologne bottles.
Oh yeah, left
people
over.
Leave them,
yeah.
And if they sit in the lost and found, yoink. I mean, they, 1 month, that's their. You're not coming back. 2 months later, I forgot my cologne.
All right, true confession. Weirdest thing you've ever found in a car at Enterprise.
Oh, well, I found a couple of guns.
Or most regrettable.
Well, I thought I
found... You found guns?
Yeah, I found...
Loaded?
No. In little cases. But,
That's kind of crazy.
Man, I've
found... Can you keep the guns? You got to turn them
in
with the cops.
You got to turn them in. Yeah.
I was hoping he was going to say something like, you know, maybe... Some, like, real, like, dirty, like, you know, goth porn or something like that.
Sure. Oh, nothing like that. One day I'm going to find a body.
Personal massagers?
Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I found...
You got some personal massagers? Well,
back massagers.
Yeah, but, in quotes.
One day,
yeah,
I was
he was making
down.
His hands like this.
Yeah, I did air quotes.
Yeah.
Sorry. But one day, actually, back then, I was living in Burleson for a long time, and we had this country road down the street from us, and so me and Rebecca, back before we were together, we were friends, we would go on walks. One time we walked down this road, and there's this little tree, and in the tree, it had a gun and a little bear that when you squeeze the bear, it said the Lord's Prayer.
Oh,
and
no.
So, and there was a, like, I mean, it was just a gun, like, and it was a real gun. It had a fully loaded clip in it, and this little bear with the Lord's Prayer on it in the tree. So we took the gun and left the bear because I didn't want to be haunted. The next day, we found we drove down the road, and there was a, community service pickup, like, crew, And I was like, someone probably, like, would left that gun there because nefarious reasons. We might have saved a life. I don't know. It was just cool.
Well, all those things happened on my prom date. By the way, my prom date did all those same things to me, so don't feel so weird about it.
But, I mean, crazy things in cars.
I was wondering with the cologne thing, because, like, whenever we were in school, it was popular to wear cologne. All the guys wore cologne all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do that whenever you were in high school? I mean, it's something is that still a
there
thing?
There's the kids that did the cologne, and then there's the kids that did the Axe body spray.
Yeah, so we didn't have the Axe body spray. So.
Yeah, see, that's all that Nouveau Riche crap. Yeah, exactly. That's the post-Charles Bronson style way to do things. But, what I remember about, like, cologne was, man, people used way too much of it.
Always.
It was kind of like, I joke around whenever I post stuff like that. Like, everybody that commented on that post were all friends that were friends of mine from junior high.
Yeah, yeah.
That remember how, like, our locker room smelled like a mix of kind of, like, Obsession and Cool Water and Jupe. Kind of mixed with the smell of moldy jock straps, testosterone, and disappointment.
Right.
Just disappointed aspirations with girls.
It was
terrible. And then, you know, an excessive amount of this, there was that Aussie hairspray stuff. It smells like grapes. Like, the worst mix. Like, jock straps, grapes, and way too much cologne, basically. A lot of guys that thought somehow that I don't need to shower after football practice, after wearing my filthy clothes,
I'll just
hose myself down with this cologne, and it'll be just fine. And it does not work, to say. That place is a biological hazard. Yeah, but cool water helped hide it better than most.
No, I saw that picture, and it took me back.
That's when you learn these lessons.
Sometimes I see pictures of Cavaricci's, for instance, mm-hmm. and I post those up, too.
Bugle Boys.
I want some Cavaricci's.
Do you? Would you twist your little ankle or the bottom part of your pants together and roll them up the way you do? And
I would. Especially if I could find some good stonewash Cavaricci's, I'd be a real treat. I'd be sporting those around town just for people who are just like, I don't know what kind of band this is. Postmodern, I don't know what. You know.
Postmodern 80s retro, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and then I'll do like a cocktail, just kind of grow my hair out on the side. Just like the side sway, you know, kind of, you know,
deal. Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, where it's shaved on this side, but it's just really long over on this side. That kind of thing.
You'd probably be way cooler now than what you're trying to be.
Man, you know, people like, I think I'm probably better in this space than I am.
Well, I definitely am than I was then, you know. But I bought all my clothes at, like, Chess King. You remember Chess King at the mall?
Yeah. Jeans West and Chess King.
That's where I was always shopping. I got all those.
A lot of rayon in those places. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Very flammable shirts.
But in my 20s, I was going to Dallas and going to, like, Club A and the Lizard Lounge and all these different dance clubs and trying to meet girls and wearing lots of clothes.
The Aqua Lounge.
Detours.
These are good places.
Was one of them, you know. But it was totally places. Just techno and just young boys trying to meet young girls.
MC
and,
Rob Vaughn.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And then I did want to talk to you a little bit about your hats. I've always been into hats since I was a little kid.
Right.
And I always liked the derbies.
Yep.
You know, and some of your hats are kind of the derbies. You wear the purple one.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the one that's on the album cover, too.
Yep.
And then now you got a black one.
Yes.
Because you just wear, I mean, like, you have lots of hats.
I do. I have a lot of hats. Like I said, I don't have a, I feel like my hair is a disappointment to humanity.
Oh, that's but, you know. So
sad. Well, mine is too, man, but I got the nice beard and I wear the hat.
I'm glad, as you can see on the radio, that I have some hair there because people are surprised. They think I'm probably bald.
I thought you were bald.
I'm not.
Yeah, you do.
But at the same point, it's just not good hair. It's not the quality hair. Like, look at Zach. Like, Zach's hair, I think, is a coif of majestic.
Yeah, he's got nice hair.
Yeah,
I just cut it.
Look at that. But, the hat thing was funny. I'm watching the first color version of Dracula, which I think was called Van Helsing or something. Or it has Van Helsing in it, which was Von Trapp from Sound of Music. Same guy.
Interesting. Okay.
He's Van Helsing in one of the Dracula. It's the Dracula where he's kind of like white with a big bald head and the pointy ears.
Not Nosferatu.
No, but that's not color.
Okay.
That's
okay.
You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I can see his face, but Van Helsing comes cruising into this hotel when he arrives to figure out what investigate this mysterious thing.
Does it have Keanu Reeves in it? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, no. Oh, Rob no, no. Shurker's? This is like from the 60s or the 50s, maybe.
Yeah,
like.
It's not the new Van Helsing thing.
So he comes in, and he has on this green hat that is, I thought it was a fedora of some sort. I didn't even know what it was, but I fell in love with the hat. So I start looking at it, and I'm literally typing in, like, Van Helsing's hat, Dracula, this, you know, trying to figure out, like, what hat it is. Finally, I find this site, and it's and it keeps pointing me to Winston Churchill's hat. So it's called a Homburg,
okay,
is what it is. It's so it's not a fedora, but I started, and they're hard to find. You know, they're definitely not a more popular cut of hat. Now this is a fedora cut, actually. This is from Gorin Brothers down in New Orleans. Actually, I got it in New Orleans.
But your purple one isn't it more of a bowler? Like it has
that
the
is
round
more.
Top?
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Is it's cut. The rim is like a bowler, like a 3-inch rim.
Uh-huh.
They curl the entire side. Usually trim it out. You know. And so I have three of those. Most of them are Italian. They're very Godfather, Mafia, Snoop Doggy right. Dog style hats.
Yeah, right.
They're so cool, though.
I love the hat. But, you know, the reality is that from the album Reality by Cutthroat Finches.
Yeah, Reality. Man.
The reality is I got those hats because I have a giant head. So at the when you cross into the 7.5 and beyond hat size, you've got to have a big hat, otherwise it looks like you're wearing like a condom on your head or a thimble.
Sure, sure.
So I basically had to embrace a larger hat, but I wasn't really ready for a full cowboy hat. So I did get the LBJ, the what do you call it, the Open Road hat, the LBJ style hat. I have one of those that I've almost destroyed from negligence. But then I have three or four Homburg hats that I wear. I like the red one, though. That's the one that people like the most. And it is the cheapest piece of crap.
Really?
Hat. It is going to disintegrate one day.
That's
on stage.
Funny.
It's going to either burst into flames, or it's going to just, like, get so saturated with sweat when I play my shows in August or whatever.
It's going to fall apart.
That it's going to just, like, kind of just kind of collapse. Like, like in, what was it, the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when the... When the little dancing dwarves like start melting, that's what my hat's gonna look like, basically. I've looked for another red one like it. I can't find one. So, you know, all you listeners out there, I'm looking for a red, crimson red Homburg hat made of rabbit. Thank you.
Made of rabbit. Is that why the last song is called Rabbit? No, not the last song. Second to last song.
You know,
is that about your hat?
That song is actually about my wife. We have a big fat rabbit at home named Charlie, and he was named Charlie because he used to bite. She bought him from Trader's Village.
Charlie bit me.
Yeah, Charlie bit me.
So I don't get that. What's that?
It's a
YouTube
video
of this English kid. And like his little brother was named Charlie. He's like, Charlie bit me, and it's hilarious. You have
it's
to look
cute.
It up.
Okay.
But
yeah.
She named him Charlie. And so he's our rabbit, and he was an eaten rabbit from Trader's Village that my wife rescued. And
aww.
You know, so after I wrote the saddest song that was ever supposed to be happy, I started getting better at writing happy songs, and rabbits is
one of those
very personal song, you know, like that. I just backed it away from ultra personal enough to where, you know, people can relate to it, but it still is very specific things, you know, like, so, you know, it says she once saved a rabbit from a stew is kind of the rabbit line.
Nice,
you know,
nice, so. Nice. Yeah, yeah.
We're getting up that time.
Uh-oh.
My phone died.
It's 18 o'clock.
I think we're okay still.
Okay.
Let's go for a few minutes. I wanted to, I wanted to follow that line, but just, we'll talk about politics for like 5 to 10 minutes. Because we want to know that
5 to 6 hours. Did you say?
I know. You could do it. It'd be so easy. And so that's why I'm like, I want to actually set.
I've got a week's worth of show. Are you ready?
Yeah. No, that's why I want to set an intention. 5-10 minutes, and then we'll close with your last song, which is also kind of a political type song. So it'll kind of work out.
Okay.
But so like, you have the shirts that you can buy.
Yeah.
It's got the elephant and the donkey on it. It says what,
same crap either way.
Right. And then reality.
Yep.
Which is that's the way I've you know.
Yeah.
I feel. As well, and then that's what I say. It's very weird. This is the first year I've always been active. I try to keep up with current events and politics. I've gone real hardcore left and watched all the MSNBC and stuff before, and kind of got tired of that and realized some of the propaganda they're feeding the left,
exactly.
Or what the corporations are feeding, they're going after our sensibilities and saying, we're doing the right thing.
And all they're trying to do is sell ads.
Right, and the right's doing the same thing.
They care less who you vote for.
And so you finally wake up and you realize, like, oh, it is the same thing.
It is.
And I was talking to my wife tonight because we watched the debates last week. You know, and it's like...
Cried yourselves to sleep?
Yeah, kind of. You know, and it's like, there are certain things that Trump says where I'm like, I don't disagree with him. I don't. I mean, I can't vote for a guy who wants to ban all Muslims and wants to deport, you know, millions of, you know, illegal immigrants. Just those kind of crazy nonsensical things that you can't do anyways.
Yeah.
Just the fact that he would say them, and he's not very tolerant. He's not... He's like a child.
Yes.
He doesn't have...
No,
ma'am.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay.
But he's just so childlike. He doesn't have the temperament as a president. He just doesn't.
No,
so
he has tremendous temperament.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I know. He says all. But then you go over to her. Now, as far as her, she plays the game. I mean, she has the temperament. You know, she has the experience. And she looks presidential. It's been 30 years. We're used to her.
Yeah.
She should be in the part that we're used to her, you know. But she's... a problem.
Yes.
At least for me as a lefty.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, this is not
a
good person. And it's like,
yep.
And so you boil it down to the, okay, well, it's the Supreme Court, right?
Yes.
So
that's true.
He's going to put in anybody who wants to push back abortion laws, marriage equality, LGBT.
Right.
So all that stuff is going to go back to the 50s. So we're going backwards. So that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't think she's a good idea either, because I think it's going to be all corporate shills who are going to pass laws to give the corporation more freedom to pollute and kill us or whatever.
Yeah.
So the reality is, it seems like we're screwed, right?
Yeah. Well, that was the backdrop. It was kind of like, I wanted a chance. We're not a political band, so we're not like, you know, the dead Kennedys or something, or the dead milkmen, I should say, that are like, you know, that have a political bent and everything that's lined in there. But not that I'm even opposed to writing an album on that, some side project that, you know, Zach and I will work on the side. But, you know, it's like, this has been what I look at just to give you an idea of how completely contrasted, just like my Debbie Gibson and Tiffany records, as well as my Dead Milkman records that I like thought were equally awesome growing up.
Sure.
And the Smiths and all that. So, but I also like, this is a Texas Nationalist shirt, so I'm for smaller government, and I think it's inevitable that we will bankrupt and that we will have to, in the fallout, Texas has plenty to protect itself. We're bigger than France and Germany combined. We would be the 19th largest economy in the world. But on the flip side, I'm also was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter.
Yeah.
And it disappointed me. It brought my daughter to tears when Bernie Sanders basically lost. And she couldn't believe that he lost, because it was like the first time she paid attention to politics, and it just... It was hugely disappointing. Bigly disappointing.
Bigly.
You know, what I look at is like there's a variety of versions of evil in our political system, and Hillary Clinton is one version of it because of what she does behind, because of the debt she has to pay back politically from the promises that she's making right now. She's $2 billion plus in the hole. $2 billion in the hole. I cannot imagine that there's an American that believes that there's not a debt and a price to be paid that she'll have to pay for that.
There definitely is, yeah, for sure.
And on the flip side, then you have another version of evil, which is everything that being a dad with daughters, I want his way of thinking. I won't say his name, but it rhymes with hump, because I don't want to get political.
Right.
But I want his way of thinking to be defeated and beaten to the ground, to the point to where people that think like him in those ways, no matter what his things are that I do agree with, like the rigness and the other things that I wish you would have kept on point with and not being such an ass about.
Right.
Since you said I could say that.
You can say ass.
But I wish that he would have stayed on that point and drove in that home. I think he could have crushed Hillary. Now, I don't even want him to be president, but what I want is his ideas to be soundly defeated, to where people that still think like that, which there's a lot of them,
the male chauvinist 1950s.
Yes, kinda, exactly.
Yeah.
That I want that to be, you know, like defeated to the level that people realize it's not even acceptable. Like there's an absolute rejection by our society
right. That's
of
not
that
cool.
way of thinking.
Yeah.
So
there's a dichotomy. But it's like, so I'm generally a libertarian. I'm registered as a libertarian, but I supported Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even going to say who I'm going to vote for, because honestly, both choices are shameful in my opinion. You know?
Yeah, I honestly don't know yet. I mean, I know that I'm not voting for Trump.
I'm for social medicine and states' rights at the same time. You know? I wrote Ideology Ends because the way people, and this election has polarized people even more than any election before, which is hard to imagine.
Yeah.
After Bush and Gore and everything, after that time frame, really Clinton in his era,
yeah,
the polarization that's occurred is unbelievable. And it's like, the good thing for all of you listening out there is that if you are a Bernie Sanders fan like me, then you know that nothing can get accomplished by a president or our Congress as long as campaign finance reform doesn't get changed.
Right. Yeah.
So don't you worry, people. Nothing's going to change. You're going to get the same crap sandwich for the next 4 years.
That's exactly it.
Because none of them can get anything done no matter what happens, you know. So there's the good news, if that's good news.
Right.
You know, so even if Trump wins and he decides he thinks he really wants to build this wall, he'll never get it passed. He'll never get his immigration law passed. Hillary Clinton will never be able to do whatever. But, you know, the problem with both of them is, what deals are they going to cut on the side?
Right.
To win their own power and to free their own base? Well, what
you hope is that, you know, no matter who you're for, if Trump gets in and you believe in the right agenda, then you need to make sure when he's in that he's still there to push your right agenda.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make sure that you're calling your congressman and writing letters, because there is some influence there still. And keep them from doing something. Yeah. If the Second Amendment is your thing and Trump gets into office and is like, yeah, I'm not that really big on the Second Amendment, I just said it to get here, which is probably true.
Really, it's about Trump Tower and business deals I'm going to work on the side with China.
So as a conservative, you need to make sure you're there to keep him honest, to keep him on the Second Amendment. Same thing with us lefties. If Hillary gets in and decides that she does want to vote for TPP, we got to make sure we're there calling our congressman saying, if you pass this, you will not be elected next year, and make sure that we're out there. You know, that's there's at least that. At least if your guy gets in, maybe you can help influence them some way, because they still do want the votes. It's not going to do them any good if we don't vote for them, no matter how much money they're getting.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's still some power, but we got to be active. We have to be off our...
When I draw it back to the song, like I said, it was my one song that I wrote that it was about, you know, all of us, like what I hear when I hear people talk about politics is this recital of these lines.
Parroting the...
Yes, and it's people that are, it's a pseudo intellectualism about politics, you know, and it's like, it is not real. It's like all they're doing is reciting the lines from the people, like, this is our line, this is our message, and we're going to keep saying it. And, you know, a great politician once said, a lie told often enough
becomes the truth.
Becomes truth. And you know who that was?
I think it was George W. Bush.
No, that was Joseph Lenin.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, from the Soviet era.
But that's true, though. I mean, you keep saying the same thing over and over and over again.
And that's what you have. And that's what you have going on. And it's like, we have... You know, the reason these politicians suck is because we suck. That's the fact.
They're a direct reflection of who we are.
They are. They're a reflection of how apathetic we've been.
Yeah, and how much we pay attention and what we know. Because if a truly elected base, I mean a truly educated citizenry wouldn't let this happen.
That's true. There's no way.
But we're not educated on the true meaning of, or on the true issues and what's really going on. We're too worried about...
We pay attention to the spinning plates and the flash and the...
Bathroom issues and
things like that. Yeah, like you said, abortion.
Abortion.
Here's the deal. It's like, on the flip side, I am I'm a Bible-believing Christian, you know? Now, I have my personal view. I do not want this country taking my religious views and making it. I'm a Jeffersonian... or Franklin style, like separations, you know, in the church and state role. I believe in that, but I want. So it's not because of that. It's the fact that it's abortion has become the thing that can get a base of people riled up on one issue, and it will never change. What I tell my conservative friends and my church going friends, if Ronald Reagan couldn't overturn Roe versus Wade,
it's not getting overturned.
These weenuses are not going to... There's no way. I don't care if it's Trump. I don't care if Ronald Reagan comes back to life. You know, he couldn't get it overthrown.
Yeah.
It's not going to change. So don't vote on these single issue things.
Right.
And on the flip side, don't also vote because you want to protect entitlements. The reality is we're $19 trillion in debt. You people that are on entitlements are going to lose those entitlements because we can't afford them. That's bottom line. Sorry. I mean, we just can't afford them. We can't afford to go to war every 3 years either. You know, there's a lot of things we can't afford. That's reality. And that's a, yeah. So that is the underpinning of it, but it's not a political record, just to be clear.
No, it's really not.
It's not a Bob Dylan war protest or Joan Baez album.
and I haven't heard all the record, you know, but the songs that I've heard, they're very thoughtful, and they seem meaningful. They're not just candy fluff, you know, I'm rhyming words that are popular or whatever to make a song, you know. I mean, it's I really like Bedroom Stare. I think that's the first song that I heard by you guys, and I was like, this is really cool, and it's really clever because I like, you know, I'm gonna get to the bottom of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Stare, you're thinking
yeah.
of the stairs, whatever.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah, yeah.
Here. Okay, I think it's recording now. So yeah, so it cut off at some point. I'll have to go in and see it. If you miss the politics talk, then maybe it's better. If you didn't, then that's fine too.
You know what it was? It's the rigged system.
It's the rigged system. They're even rigging it from here. They're cutting us off.
Even your podcast record. Yeah, that's right.
So, but I really think we have well over an hour. And Reality is the name of the album.
Yeah.
You can get it at...
You can get out here at Docks.
At Docks, you can get
you
it.
You can also get Chiefs. It at Chiefs and at Record Town
on Barry or
yeah,
University.
Yeah, on Barry or yeah, University near Barry. You can also go online if you're out of town. You know, to Hand Drawn Records, they'll send it out to you.
Okay.
HandDrawnRecords.com, and they'll send out, you know, vinyl to you and everything like that. So they'll sell them straight through the site.
If you're local and they want to contact you, will you bring it over on your Vespa? Because I've seen a video of you delivering a record on a Vespa.
If you are in the Fort Worth city limits, I will hand deliver the record to your house for $20.
Nice.
That's fair.
That's fair. A deal.
That's
fair.
It cost me 18 cents in gas to get anyone in Fort Worth basically on that little hot rod.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So, and he might even make a video about it because I watched a video of you know, take one. I thought that was really, really cool.
Sometimes I just go to people's doors and I put an IOU and leave the record. So
oh, there you
that's
go.
That's another technique for that's called distribution, Zach.
Right.
That
right.
Phantom
right.
Sensation needs to embrace.
Or the Happy Amp. Yeah. Yeah, you're like, here's your record. You owe me 20 bucks.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I know you wanted this. Now buy it.
I'll be back tomorrow. Collect.
Yeah, that was Cha-ching. Jamie. That was the lucky winner, Jamie Ice. See, and now that I know he's a Trinity Trojan, it makes it even sweeter.
Right, there you go. He'll be 40.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. It's premium. It's a limited edition.
Right, exactly.
That's what we'll tell him.
So, well, check it out. Like I said, I haven't heard all of them. Ideology Ends, I did hear earlier today. I heard it on SoundCloud, and that's a really great song. So that's what we're going to hear next. Listen is one of those ones like, oh, you know what? This dude can actually sing. I mean, you're a rock singer, so you kind of got the raspy voice, and it sounds great. But this one here, you're a little slower down a little bit.
Yeah.
And can actually hear some of your vocal. I mean, like, your really actual, you know.
Yeah.
It's good. You know, he said Boundaries and Bedroom Stare, I know, are great, and Boom Beast is awesome. And so I'm looking forward to hearing you know, all the ones I don't know.
I've
seen you guys live a handful of times, and it's always great. High energy, good stuff, man. So if you don't know them, get out and see them.
Yeah, we're at November the 4th. We're at Lola's playing with the Vandaliers. It's their CD release.
And they're awesome.
Right on. So it'll be a good show.
That will be a great show, for sure.
Should be real, like, nut to butt in there.
Yeah,
right. Say that.
Hopefully.
You can say it. Right? Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
November 4th. That's coming up.
November the 4th. That's right.
All
right.
Right on.
And make sure, I guess, to vote right after that. Go see the Cutthroat Finches on November 4th, and then go out and vote November 8th.
That's right. That's right.
Right on. All right, well, here we go. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out.
Rolling. Side.
ideologies out. Question and absorb the next 3 second clip that blows your mind. Behind.